Antony Mulitka. During Nazi Germany's occupation of the Czech Republic, those in mixed marriages, or children of mixed marriages, were protected from deportation, at least for a while. Antony Mulitka was one of them. Her father had actually converted to Judaism before she was born in 1928, but for some reason the city authorities did not have his file. And Antony was spared being sent to Terezin until very late in the war, March 1944. Our interviewer, Barbara Pokris, spoke with Antony in November and December 2004 in the Jewish Community Center of Brno, where Antony had been working for more than 20 years. A link to her full biography can be found in the show notes, and her story is read for us by Jilly Bond in London.
In 1922, right here in Brno, this Christian man met a Jewish woman from Romania. They fell in love. They wanted to get married, but this man had to convert to Judaism for her. So he went to the rabbi of the great synagogue. And after 3 years of studying with the rabbi, going to services, learning Hebrew and the prayers, this man, Ludovit Michal, married Yindriska Reiter in 1925. My parents. I was born in 1928. My brother, Karel, or Karliček, in 1932. We went to Jewish nursery school and elementary school. We went to services. We kept kosher. A mother prepared these beautiful dinners for Shabbos on Friday. My father worked in a textile mill, but in 1930 he found out that they were looking for a superintendent at the brand new Maccabi sports field. Maccabi is an international Jewish sports club. The job came with an apartment, right on the grounds. I think it was the most beautiful field in the country. There was enough room for soccer, handball, track and field, tennis courts too. There was even a restaurant. And lawns for families that would come on Sundays. They'd spread out blankets and play with their children. You should have seen the big sports events. The children had these beautiful blue and white uniforms, and there were nearly 100 of us. Then came 1939. Brno was at least a third ethnic German, and that made our lives hell. Those restrictions. Horrible. Jews weren't allowed to go to parks or walk on certain streets. Even in the streetcar, we had to stand in a certain wagon. The Maccabi Field was taken over by the Germans. We weren't just thrown out. We even had to demolish our house and raze it. We were confined to a small, crumbling little flat, the four of us. They summoned me for a transport to Terezin, on the 7th of April 1944. Even though my father had converted to Judaism, his official papers didn't say that, and this saved him and my mother, for a while at least, because mixed marriages were protected. When I arrived in Terezin, I was 16. I was alone and sobbing. This girl, a student, came over to me. "You're Tonichka. Remember me? I used to go to Maccabi. Where are your parents?" I was bawling and told her I was alone. That girl, she kept an eye on me and brought me to where 32 other girls were living and sharing bunks. I was still sobbing, so this one girl came over and sat next to me, and very quietly she said, "I've been here for 3 months and I haven't cried once. And yet, when I look out that window, I can almost see the little town where I was born and grew up. I can't go there. But I'm just not going to cry." Suddenly I felt ashamed. And the tears stopped. This girl became my best friend. We shared everything. We clung together. We helped each other. things got so much worse. They were selecting people for the transports to the east, which, of course, we had no idea what that meant, and girls were leaving with their parents. That's how I lost my friend. Then more friends. And more. I remember one of the call-ups. Back in Brno, I shared a desk with František Tichý, who was from a wealthy Jewish family. His mother would drive him to school and pick him up. In the summer, she'd drive a red convertible, always wearing an elegant hat. Mrs. Tichý always told me to come visit, which I did. Then in the afternoon, she'd drive me home. Being with them showed me another world, a richer world. I was absolutely bedazzled. And František was this very talented, very cute boy. He attended school with me from grade one. Now, back then, boys and girls didn't really talk with each other. He sat beside me, and when he saw that I didn't have the right kind of crayon, he'd slip one to me. And if I was struggling with an answer, he pointed to his own paper. Then I saw František in Terezín during a roll call. I guess he was 16 or 17 then. He was standing across from me and we were looking at each other. He gazed at me, but just stared blankly. We never saw each other again. He was sent away on a transport, his entire family. His beautiful mother. They all perished. One winter's day in February 1945, I saw my mother walking toward me, right there in Terezín. I was shocked. Back in Brno, she told the Gestapo that Karliček had vanished, that he had probably been killed in a bombing raid. When she told them that, they arrested her and threw her in jail in Prague, and later to Terezín. By then she was weak. She was pale. And I realised I was going to have to take care of my mother. One day in May, the Russians arrived. My mother and I said to each other, "All right, let's go." We got onto an open cattle wagon and were on our way home. On the way, people greeted us at each stop and handed us baskets of cakes and food. They wept and embraced us. They asked us about family members who had been taken away. 2 days later, we reached Brno, and on our street, not one building remained standing. But our neighbour said that Karliček was at Mrs. Ruprechtova's. We ran like mad women. And there he was. And he just smiled and said, "You see, Mummy, I always told you that Tonichka would return from the concentration camp, and here she is." What this boy had been through. From the age of 10, he had gone into hiding. My father's friend, Mr. Sturza, who had a huge auto mechanic repair shop, took in Karliček. That's where he worked, and there were 18 other young men there. They must have figured out the Karliček was Jewish, but not one of them said a word. And when their parents would bring them food during the day, they brought extra and pointed to my little brother. Karliček went from home to home, slept outside, stayed in barns and garages. People helped him. But the Gestapo never stopped looking for him. They just never thought to look in that workshop. They didn't bring father until later. He was in a wheelchair. The poor man had been taken into forced labour in March 1944. They were repairing railroad tracks, and father fell under a train. He lost both legs. He was very badly off emotionally, so we told him, "You have taken care of us, now we're going to take care of you." And in time, he got a tobacco shop, which he went to every day. Karliček was supposed to go back to school, but he was hopelessly behind. He knew two things: how to repair cars, and that he wanted to go to Israel. Mother was horrified that he'd be alone and without family. To this he said, "Don't worry, Mummy, but I can't stay here. No one is going to call me a dirty Jew ever again." Father considered his son a hero for going to Israel. When he arrived in Palestine in 1948, they put him up in Ramat Gan. In time, he married, raised a family, worked in a garage, and Karliczek even raced cars. My brother has had a beautiful life. As for us, Dad sat behind the counter of his newsstand every day. He died at the age of 83. But Mum's health was wrecked. We lost her much earlier. I met my husband in 1956. We divorced amicably in 1978. I worked in the computer room of a machine works factory. I retired in 1986, and immediately they called me from the Jewish community, where I've worked for 20 years. We look after those who don't have family, who need help to go to the doctor, to go to synagogue. We even have a team of volunteers and pay for nursing services. As for talking about the Holocaust, I was very cautious in telling my son about it. I just told him, let's say, some fragments. I wanted him to put it together himself. It wasn't like this interview you're conducting, when we're sitting here and I'm telling you everything. No. I couldn't do that. He's my son, after all. I wanted to protect him. And I still do. Because it's been proven that this kind of fear gets passed on to the second generation. That even his children could still be afraid. So yes, I wanted to protect him. And I have had enough of fear myself.